This is Twit.
So one of the things that you hit on in your piece, Drew, is, you know, of course, if you're not really familiar with all of this and the dynamics of it, you might be tempted to pay the ransom just to, you know, make it go away. Why shouldn't people do that?
You know, it's that saying of, can you really trust anybody? And it's a very narrow, it's a very negative way to think about things. But in the cyberspace world and in cyber world, you can't really trust anybody, and you never know what's going to happen. And if you start shelling out money in hopes that you're going to get your files back or your data back, what's to say that you're going to get them back at all of them back? And even that, if you're willing to pay once, why wouldn't you be willing to pay again? And you don't know what these attackers or hacker groups have put on your computer to either continue that, you know, effect or the accessing your computer. And it sets a very bad precedent. As much as you want to get your stuff back, there's other ways to go about it. And that goes in lines with making sure you as an individual or your business has a good data policy in place.
Well, I think maybe the second thing you would think about if you were subject to something like this and you weren't terribly conversant in all of the ins and outs of, you know, what this was and how you deal with it, you might think about paying the ransom. Hopefully next you would think about calling the police. What's your take on what happens when people do that?
You know, it's not too often to my understanding that people actually do that, because I don't think people know if there is a way to resolve that. But I think it is a good step. It can't hurt to call law enforcement and say, hey, here's what happened. I paid this money. Can you make a record of this? And most of the time, people don't know who the other person is on the side of the computer or the one who has access to their computer. And that's part of the problem of filing a police report, is who's the other person. And you know, there's times where I've known people that take it to the Best Buy Geek Squad or some sort of PC repair place where they're able to at least extract enough information from your device to tell you, hey, here's what's going on, here's what you need to do to protect and transfer your files. But, you know, it never hurts to report it.
Right. The EFF has written – go ahead, Matt, before I go on to this.
Yeah, you're also talking about businesses who don't – their incentives don't line up with necessarily telling the police, because they've just had, you know, hospitals and businesses that have credit card information. These businesses, they're on the hook in some sense for their own security breaches, and therefore paying them – especially when it's time-sensitive information, is oftentimes going to look like the best option. Not at all advising that, but the incentive doesn't line up for compliance in alerting authorities.
Right, and that's a really good point, because if your data has been compromised and you're a business, there are many situations where you're obligated by law to let your customers know about this quickly and let them take remedial steps or provide remedial steps for them to prevent identity theft or whatever they can, you know, try to stop the flood from coming out of the dike from the fact that the data you're maintaining for them has been compromised. So you're right, the incentives may be tricky, but it's very tricky as a business. If you don't do what you're required to do under law, you're in really hot water then. So you need, as a business, to be conscious of, you know, if you've been subject to something like this, you know, immediately get your legal team on board and doing the right things to give the notices you need to do, and hopefully involving law enforcement to make you one of the many who are identified as having been hit by whatever you've been hit by. The EFF the EFF wants to cry. Everyone wants to cry over this, but particularly the patching problem is what they've written about, and how there is what they've quoted as a toxic hell stew of known vulnerabilities that simply aren't patched, and or in some cases can't be patched, and are, you know, posing this huge threat to our infrastructures. And they point out that President Trump, when he was campaigning, I'm quoting from EFF here, expressed tremendous concern about national cybersecurity weaknesses, stating the scope of our cybersecurity problem is enormous. Our government, our businesses, our trade secrets, and our citizens' most sensitive information are all facing constant cyber attacks. And what EFF would like to see the administration do to follow through on that is to place a greater emphasis on funding defensive security research. Research into defensive methods and better strategies for patching systems is less sexy, they write, than overhyped zero-day vulnerabilities or imaginary cyber missiles, but it is the surest path to a more secure internet for everyone. So from a law and policy standpoint, that's something that people should be thinking about getting in touch with their representatives in response to this and saying, hey, you know, we've got to put a stop to this. And as we're talking through right now on the show, your remedies, if this happens to you, are not great. Paying the ransom, certainly not something you should do. Getting in touch with law enforcement, I would say yes, by all means, and know your responsibilities if you're a business as well, as to how you have to address the fact that you've been compromised. But I also get the feeling that, you know, again, coming back to if the NSA can be stolen from and basically duped in this way to the detriment of all the rest of us, to look to law enforcement in our current state, you know, I think they're kind of playing catch up at this point. They're not out ahead of this problem in the way we'd all like them to be. So I tend to agree with the EFF that we need to be devoting tax dollars toward addressing this problem on a broad scale. What do you think, Matt?
I think that this is like a basic problem of almost all, you know, cyber warfare is just another form of warfare, and the cost of defense are always higher than the cost of attack. And the cost of attacking a network system, it can be done by anybody and anywhere. Obviously, they have to have the skills. But yeah, I mean, anything we can do to the defense, I think we have to recognize that it's an individual thing and a system-wide thing. Because the backups things, the sort of easy things that you have to do that we put in place checks for, whether it's so that users can keep the old systems they want them, they have to realize that there's cost and benefits to that as well. But I don't think that there's I don't think it matters how much I think that putting money towards this is a good thing, but ultimately there's no like 100% success rate in this situation.
Right. And one point I wanted to come back to that I asked you about earlier, Matt, is if, you know, I think we all probably agree that suing the NSA would be a really tough road here to try and recoup any losses. Microsoft, possibly, but, you know, they didn't know. Should they have known? That would be the should they have known on their own? Are they liable for having a buggy operating system? I think people have tried to sue them over the years for that, a vulnerable operating system, and haven't had a lot of success. So you know, it's just one of those things that you accept and that is disclaimed like crazy when you license and use software, that it's not perfect and that it's a work in progress, and that you as the user have some responsibility to make sure that you're upgrading and patching. And that's bringing me back to the point of, you know, the people and businesses who do choose to use older versions of an operating system, I think when push came to shove in a lawsuit like that, would find themselves subject to pretty strong arguments that, hey, you know, we've told you that operating system isn't secure any longer and isn't supported, and, you know, you're using it at your own risk. So too bad. Anybody disagree with that, Drew?
You know, I think with the patching of the software, there's only so much Microsoft can do, and it's a thin line no matter what, because, you know, there's always something on both sides that individuals can do. But when it comes to patching, kind of like what Matt said, is that there's a cost benefit analysis to all of this, and how much is the NSA or the Cyber Defense Department willing to allocate towards the offensive part of cyber versus the defensive side of cyber? And I believe one of the articles you had put up a few minutes ago, I forget the name of it, but it stated that 90% of funds allocated towards cyber defense are on the offensive, whereas the other 10 are allocated towards the defensive. But, you know, it's always nice to keep your system upgraded, and I think everybody has a responsibility, and it's hard to allocate what type of percentage goes to whom.
Right. And I guess the last thing we should cover in this topic is that the fact that it's been identified and patched doesn't mean that it's the end of the story. What might happen next, Drew?
There's always something bigger and more, I guess, effective, you could say. And if it's not WannaCry today, it's WannaScream or whatever else may come out. And, you know, there's always some sort of exploit in any program. And there's no perfect software. There's no perfect coding. But, you know, all we can hope for is that operating systems such as Microsoft and Apple and Linux, you know, they have the ability to inform its consumers and its users of potential threats. And in this situation, it was scary because both the NSA and Microsoft knew ahead of time, and the length of time it took to release the patch was, you know, arguably a problem.